You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and you're about to hear how another plant-loving chica found the plants. Or really, how the plants found and helped another health-struggling chica. I'm saying another because I'm one of those chicas too, but you already got that, right? Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. This episode is sponsored by my BFF's Amazing Grass, who just became even more amazing by launching some new awesome, amazing stuff. Elixirs. Elixirs is kind of a hot word being thrown around the healthy product marketing town. So if you're wondering, the true definition of an elixir is a magical or medicinal potion. So Amazing Grass is three new organic medicinal potions, which come in packets or tubs as per their usual, are crafted to support your beauty, your brain, and your belly. No, not all at once. I'm a personally humongo fan of their brain potion, elixir, which has my beloved matcha in it, plus my also beloved maca, among a bunch of other carefully chosen ingredients which work together to keep your focus in check. Ah, but I'm also a humongo fan of their belly elixir, which I've been especially going to town on since it has probiotics in it, and I've weirdly misplaced my probiotics in my home. To take Amazing Grass to the next level of amazingness, they're offering Party in My Plants podcast listeners 40% off. Yes, 40%, not some measly 10%, 40% off your Amazing Grass orders if you go to their website, amazinggrass.com, and use coupon code PLANTPARTY40 at checkout. That's PLANTPARTY40 at checkout on amazinggrass.com. And all that info is also linked in the show notes at partyinmyplants.com/62. My guest today is my sister from another mister, a woman with another catchy business name that has the word plant in it, a wearer of the coolest hats ever, literally and also figuratively, because she wears super stylish hats on her head, but she also wears the hat of podcast host, second podcast host. Yeah, she has two podcasts, cookbook author, mom, wife, stage 4 endometriosis thriver, and proudly, well, I don't know if she's proud about it, but I'm proud about it. My friend. Okay, you know I'm talking about Jessica Murnan, right? Well, if you don't already know Jessica's work or her vegan and gluten-free chocolate chip cookies, you are probs about to fall in love with her and them. I should probably tell you actual biography stuff right now, right? So, okay, well, Jessica is the founder of One Part Plant, a movement dedicated to helping peeps not party in their plants, that's my thing, but help them eat one plant-based meal a day, which is equally as cool. She's the host of the One Part Podcast, the Cookbook Deal Podcast, and she's the author of the must-have plant cookbook called, you guessed it, One Part Plant. All right, well, Jessica might be one part plant, but our chat is 100 parts awesome. Girlfriend, Jess, thank you so much for coming on the Party of My Plants podcast.
Can we just pretend like we didn't just talk over 40 minutes before this?
Can we also pretend I did not just say girlfriend, because I've never said that before in my life. You bring it out in me.
Okay, good.
So nice to chat with you, even though we've been talking for 40 minutes off the record. So we have similar stories in that health issues both led us to the plants, but we have very different health issues that led us to the plants. So I'd love for you to share what led you to the plants.
Just briefly, it's just in one word if you want. What was your health issue?
Digestive issues.
Digestive. Okay. I knew it was digestive, but I didn't know if you had an actual specific diagnosis.
I had IBS, but that is BS. It doesn't mean anything.
Okay.
It literally means we can't figure out what's wrong with you. Your stomach hurts sometimes with some food. So we're just going to say you have IBS. There you go.
Yeah, I guess it could stand for IBS, could stand for it's BS.
BS. It does. That's what I write in my bio.
So actually, it's funny because I was diagnosed with IBS and I did not have it.
See?
I was diagnosed with that yes. multiple times. But yeah, so I have stage 4 endometriosis, which is a reproductive disorder. And I only say reproductive disorder because it happens during women's reproductive years. So it, you know, it generally starts when a woman gets her period up until menopause. And it is, just briefly, it's when the tissue that is similar to the lining of your uterus grows outside of your uterus. So it can grow onto other parts of your body. Like it's been on my rectum and on my liver.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
What's crazy is it sounds like it's like kind of like this, oh my gosh, this is some crazy obscure disease, but it's not. 1 in 10 women have it. It's just that it takes an average of 10 years for women to be diagnosed.
And, why?
And an average of 8 doctors.
Why? I don't get that.
Well, it's funny because there was this study that came out in the UK. They have these new guidelines now for endometriosis. And basically it was telling doctors, like, number one was, listen more to your patients, because it's like it's weird, because I will say I don't want to totally blame doctors for it, because so many of the symptoms of endo you wouldn't necessarily relate to a reproductive disorder. But at the same time, I do think that, you know, you go in and you get a breast exam, right? Like, or you know, as a woman at a certain age, you need to start feeling your breasts for lumps, mm-hmm. or at a certain age, you need to start getting mammograms. But no one is ever giving you a sheet of paper with endometriosis symptoms, which is insane to me, because 1 in 10 women have it. So yeah. I think it takes a long time, because the symptoms, and I'll just briefly, symptoms are diarrhea, constipation, painful sex, not being able to hold your urine, peeing all the time, really, really bad periods is kind of across the board.
Yeah.
Blood clots. So it's, you know, digestive issues are also one of them. So you have all these things and you just are kind of like, well, you know, I get diarrhea.
Could be IBS. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very frustrating to me. And I try to take that frustration and, you know, do something positive with it. I do go to high schools to teach them about the symptoms, because another huge thing with endometriosis is infertility. And,
right.
and what happens is that most women are not diagnosed with this until their late 20s or early 30s. And if they could know earlier in life and do something about it, then they'd have a greater chance of being able to have kids.
Well, when you say do something about it, what can one do about it?
Well, first off is you get surgeries for it, because there's two types of surgeries you can get. There's an ablation surgery and there's an excision surgery. Excision surgery is the best surgery for endo. Unfortunately, there are very few skilled doctors that do that type of surgery. And that's the other thing, is that most of endometriosis surgeries are done not by surgeons. They're done by just OBGYNs that deliver babies. And I'm not saying those aren't surgeons, but I don't think that they are skilled in the way that they need to be to do this.
Right.
And so, for instance, I just had this giant cyst. It was the size of a baby head. I had a woman, the doctor here where I live, wanted to cut open my stomach to take it out. And I've had that done to me before 10 years ago.
Oh.
But there was a specialist that I found in New York that could do it laparoscopically.
Nice.
So the unfortunate thing is, you know, I borrowed money from my dad to get that surgery done, because I didn't want to be cut open again. So there's a lot of women with endo that cannot afford these types of surgeries and cannot afford to continue to miss work and miss out on their lives because of the pain. So they end up getting hysterectomies.
Oh.
And this is turning into a really depressing.
This really is.
But I just think it's so important to talk about it, because you do not know, Talia, how many women I meet, like, it makes me cry to think about it, that like me telling them the word endometriosis is the first time that they've ever heard it, and they are women that have it.
That's really interesting to me. My mom has endometriosis, and for my entire life, she's always told me that pretty casually. I mean, she used to say it was she had really bad periods, and you know, when I used to have really bad periods, she'd be like, oh, I had them really bad too. I have endometriosis. And I was like, oh, I don't know what that is, but like, that sounds interesting. Like, I'm sorry. Are you okay? She's like, yeah, I'm fine. I don't know if she got a surgery. I should have asked her before this call, but I've actually grown up with the word in my home. So it's mind blowing to me that women who actually have it have not even heard of it.
Yeah, they don't even know they have it. I mean, I helped diagnose this woman at my son's school who was in so much pain. She couldn't get out of bed. And I was talking to her sister and she asked me about what I did. And I told her and she was like, oh my God, those symptoms sound exactly like my sister's symptoms. She was 40 years old when she was diagnosed.
Wow.
Like doctors told her she had a thyroid problem. Thyroid problems do not cause painful periods.
Yeah. I mean, wow.
So you're very fortunate. That's very cool that you were aware of that. And you know, and I think the crazy thing with your mom is her normal, her feeling fine could have been not normal at all. Because when you live with chronic pain, whether it's arthritis or endo or things like that, pain just becomes your norm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know that that's what you experienced.
Yeah. Not anymore.
Yeah. You used to experience. Well, you also have stage four. My mom, maybe she had stage one or something. You know, I know it definitely.
Yeah.
She doesn't talk about it in the same way that you've described being in just like constant pain and misery until you found the plants. So tell us, how did you find the plants? How did you realize that plants, eating a more plant-based diet could help your endometriosis? I mean, you just explained how you didn't even really know what it was. Not many people know what endometriosis is. So how did you even realize that eating a certain way could even help that?
Well, a friend was staying with me, my friend Amanda, who I actually dedicated my book to. So if anyone gets my book and it says to Amanda on the front, that is Amanda. She was staying with me and I was at that point when she was staying with me, I had decided that I was going to get a hysterectomy and because I just like couldn't deal anymore. And she saw me, I remember it really well because she saw me prop myself up on a table and because I was in so much pain. And I don't think that was the reason why she went home and started doing research. But I think it was the first time that she actually saw the fact that this was very real for me. Because I think that when you deal with chronic pain, like we talked about, you get really good at hiding it. And people don't realize like, oh, maybe that person's just kind of a bitch all the time. Like they don't know that that person's in pain and that's why they're being a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like
totally.
I think chronic pain can become your personality.
Yes.
So she saw that happen and she went back to LA and she just started Googling some things and she sent me a link. It was literally just an email with a link that said, I thought you might find this interesting or maybe you could try this. And it was just a link about how plant-based diets could help with endometriosis. And I mean, this is 7 years ago. So at this time, like your podcast didn't exist. Like, I mean, there was definitely,
I can't imagine a time before my podcast existed. I mean, did time even exist without Party of My Plants podcast? I don't know.
But yeah, it was like, you know,
plant-based wasn't like a thing.
It wasn't a thing.
Yes.
And it was not something that, you know, and I think a lot of people have experienced this. It's, if this was a thing, why didn't my doctor tell me? You know what I mean? I mean,
it makes sense that you would have that reaction. Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah.
Totally.
And but
nowadays,
now
you don't expect your doctor to tell you healthy things, but whatever.
Right.
That's another story.
So because I knew I was going to get a hysterectomy, I was like, I'll try this. Like, I think it's stupid, but I will try this. Like, I really did think it was, when I read the stuff that I was not allowed to eat, I was like, this is insanity.
What were you eating at the time?
Candy. Like, I loved candy.
Just a lot of food group.
Yeah, exactly. I do think of candy as a food group. But no, I didn't cook at all. So I think, you know, my meals consisted of lean cuisines. I knew how to make spaghetti.
Nice. Wow. You were like lean cuisine level.
Yeah. Oh. Oh my God. Damn. My husband cooked every one of our meals. Like, oh, I didn't cook at all.
Wow.
So when I read that, it's like, oh, well, I don't even, like, first of all, I can't eat cheese. And secondly, like, how the fuck are you supposed to cook brown rice? Like, I don't even know like, what brown rice is.
Oh my God. And you were living in Chicago. You weren't like in the middle of nowhere, right? At the
no,
time?
But you can like really good food and not cook.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, like I like loved like the best restaurants in Chicago, but like, am I going to make brown dod at home? Like, no, I would have no idea how to like whip cod it with potatoes.
I didn't even know that's so, what like, that was. Okay, thanks.
So like when I would go home, I would just eat what was easy. And so, but I love my friend and I thought I would give it a shot. And I said I would try it for a few weeks and I did. And it, I mean, 7 years later, I did not get a hysterectomy and I wrote a cookbook about plant-based food.
Amazing. That is awesome. What a story.
But it was hard.
Yeah.
And well, I think that's the thing. It
Let's
was
talk
hard.
About that. Yeah, for sure. Okay. Like, how did you start? I mean, did you just go full plant-based the next day? I mean, cut out the candy and you learn brown rice and then
candy
you're good?
Candy was the last to go.
Candy was the last to go.
No, really. Like, yeah. Like, I kept candy in probably for, I would say, a year into changing my diet. And it was less. I mean, clearly it was the sugar. Like we all know about sugar addictions, but
right.
No, I wrote about this in my book, but, and so this is like true story. For the first 2 weeks or so, this is not an exaggeration. I ate corn tortillas with salsa. That's what I had for lunch every single day.
And it still helped you feel better?
Yeah, because it was like not a whole bunch of processed shit. Like what I had found for me personally is that the stuff that was making me feel the worst was dairy, just tons of processed foods, meat, gluten. So like those are for me my biggest triggers. Like, yes, like now that I'm 7 years in, am I able to recognize that corn sometimes makes me feel inflamed? Totally. But at that time, it made me feel way better,
yeah,
you know,
based on what
and
you
so,
mean.
Yeah. And I think it's like not everyone can go from eating that way to going fully plant-based. And for me, it was like, okay, I like Mexican food. What can I eat that's plant-based? I know I can pick up salsa at the grocery store. Actually, I did make homemade salsa. And I remember so well. I don't know if you know that restaurant in LA called Botanica. My friend Emily Pfeiffer owns it. It's like, it's kind of like the cool new it restaurant.
Oh.
And you look it up. It's really, it's very cool. They're always getting written up. And I remember I'm saying this because it's funny that I text this to a chef. But I remember the very first day on the diet, I made homemade salsa and I had bought corn tortillas. And I remember I took a picture of it and I sent it to Emily and I was like, look, I made this.
And she's a real chef of a restaurant.
Yeah. It was very, very hard and it was very emotional. I was very pissed off about changing my diet. I was livid about the entire experience. But then it's like, how can you deny that you're not curled up in a ball in the fetal position in bed, right?
I'm just so thrilled in a way. That's the wrong adjective, but I'm something positive that you just said you were so livid because I think that most people envision transitioning into a healthier diet as being, you know, rainbows and bananas and like blueberries and butterflies, you know, this like, oh, like peaceful, happiest time of your life. And the truth is, it can hurt. It can suck. You're changing your old ways. You're letting go of some things that you've been emotionally attached to, food groups. You know, so it's so honest of you to say that it sucked.
Yeah, it sucked.
But it was worth it.
Yeah, and it was worth it. And I think that you said that so well because it's not just about the food. It's about going out with your friends and family and wanting to feel included and losing what you feel like are your traditions with food. And so it's a huge psychological fuck to your head. Are we allowed to cuss on this? I'm so sorry.
Yeah, we're good.
Okay. It's a big mind melt. I'll say that.
We already said it.
You can edit.
I know.
But yeah, it's bigger than that. And I, you know, maybe there are a lot of plant-based people out there that shift was easy. And I think that that is awesome. But I think that for the majority of America, that change is hard. And I think that we should talk about it more.
Yeah, no, I'm so pumped that you're talking about it. For me, I think it depends if you're, like, you were in so much pain. I'm actually kind of surprised it wasn't easier for you, because I had suffered with digestive issues for like 8+ years, and I was so desperate. I would have done anything. And I had one raw vegan meal in LA, and it was the first meal in 8 years that didn't make me feel god awful. And the next day I'm like, I'm a raw vegan. And I was so stoked about it, because finally I found something that made me feel like a person like I wanted to feel in this world. So for me, it was kind of easy, I guess, at first, but then later, after the, like, you know, glamour of feeling good wore off, I had the social issues big time.
Mm-hmm. The reality set in.
Yeah, the reality set in.
We're like, you're not in LA anymore.
Exactly. I left LA. I went back. I was in college. I went back to college, and I was in a sorority, and I was like, how am I supposed to drink green juice? You know, you couldn't buy it in the store at the time. I had to juice it myself. How are you supposed to make your own green juice and also, like, go to sorority parties and, like, drink boxed wine? You know, so I dropped out of my sorority. I stopped dating. I just became a complete, what I call, health nut hermit. And that, you know, that's part of my journey. So I guess,
this was hard for you.
Yeah, I guess it was really hard.
you dropped out of your sorority.
Yeah, I became really depressed and antisocial. So great. Go plants. End of story. No, so I think it is really important to talk about. But the thing is, for both of us and for, I think, everyone, it's worth it. You know, it's 100% worth it.
Well, anything, I mean, for the most part, anything that you become really good at is hard at first. Like, you know, that first day at your job, you don't understand the computer system. Like, what I don't understand is there's a bathroom key. Like, what's happening? Like, it just is annoying and hard. And so this is just something that takes practice. And I think sometimes it's harder before it's good. But I will also say, it sounds like you and I both started with the plants, as you say, when they were not as available and there weren't as many cool cookbooks and podcasts. And so I think that if I had the type of resources that I have now, like Kite Hill or different products to make it
so
easier.
That's the first thing that came to your mind. Kite Hill.
Yeah, well, that's kind of like, if you're transitioning to a plant-based diet and your favorite thing is cream cheese, like, I'm personally, even though I'm into this, I'm not making my own fake cream cheese. Like, I'm just not going to. So I think that if there were products and cool cookbooks and things going on when I changed, I think the transition might have been easier.
You're 100% right. You're 100% right. I felt isolated as well, because I would make my own cream cheese. You know, I'd soak my cashews, do my thing. And I was like, I couldn't have a social life. I couldn't leave my kitchen. And I do think for people now, with cookbooks like yours, which we'll talk about in a second, because it's mind-blowing you wrote a cookbook after you celebrated making salsa a few years earlier. But we'll get there in a sec. But, you know, with all these products readily available, you can stop at any gas station and get coconut water and kombucha. I mean, and it's trendy. I mean, it's like actually like a cool thing to do now, which, you know, I actually would be curious to hear your thoughts on the trend, because I have heard you say in a podcast that sometimes when you order food in a restaurant without dairy or something, you feel like you want to follow up your order saying, like, not because I'm following a trend.
Well, I think I usually say, I want to say not because I'm trying not to get fat. Or like I'm doing like a fad diet.
Fad
or something.
Diet, right.
Yeah. Which, do you think the person that is taking my order actually gives a shit why I'm not getting dairy in my food? I don't think I care about it as much now because it is way more mainstream.
Oh, if you don't modify your order, there's something wrong with you now.
Right.
It's like you want it off the menu. Don't you have some restrictions? Like so many restaurants here in New York, you'll order and you'll give the menu and they'll be like, do you have any restrictions I should be aware of? And it's like, I would have told you, but thank you. It's like really above and beyond.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. But I do think that it is important. I know I've talked about this in my podcast before, is that you live in New York. I live in Charleston, which is not New York, but it's still pretty, I think, advanced culinary wise. But I do think that we live in places that do have options. And there are people out there listening to this right now that might feel just as isolated as we did because they don't have access to vegetarian restaurant or a Whole Foods, or they don't have the income to participate in those things. So, I mean, I do think that one thing with my cookbook that was important to me, there is a couple maybe obscure ingredients like a nutritional yeast. It's usually optional, but I tried to make my cookbook so everyone could get those items either on Amazon or at Walmart, because yes. I've said it before, but I just think that wellness and plant-based eating should be available to all people, not just people that can afford like cacao nibs, you know?
Ashwagandha.
Yeah.
I always use ashwagandha as my example because it's just a ridiculous word.
Yeah.
It sounds like, expensive.
Yeah, it is expensive. But I think that for people like us that are trying to be more inclusive of, I think it's our responsibility sometimes to make sure that the ingredients that we use for our recipes are available to a lot of people.
Yes, I love that. I so agree with you. And I'm really appreciative that you just said that because it's so, so, so true. And it's easy to take for granted, you know, living in New York that I can get, I have like 12 varieties of vegan ice cream at stores, exactly. You know, like within a 5-block radius. I mean, I have freaking vegan crepes right down the street, vegan gluten-free, you know, it's crazy. So no, you're absolutely, absolutely right that it's not about that anyway. I mean, that stuff is fun, but it's really about what you do in your everyday life, what you make in your own kitchen. That's how it's a really sustainable way of life.
For sure.
So how did you go from making salsa and that being very exciting to making a fantastic cookbook, which I'm not just saying that. I mean, I've made your chocolate chip cookies multiple times. I've made your curry way more than multiple, like a ton of times. Like, it's a great cookbook. So how did that happen that you went from salsa to a beautiful, amazing cookbook in just a, like, what, 7 years?
Yeah, 7 years. Crazy. I mean, I worked my ass off to do that. And I think that you will also notice that in the cookbook, all the recipes are very easy.
Yeah.
Like, I think that there was a certain time period where I did feel, I don't want to say not ashamed. Ashamed is not the right word, but I did feel a little bit self-conscious of the fact that there's people like my friend Emily that owns Botanica, and there's Laura Wright of The First Mess that are actually, you know, they have culinary degrees. Or
I do too.
Emily has. Okay. Well, you do too. And like Emily has like done work with, like worked at like Ottolenghi's restaurant and all this stuff. And like there was a time where I felt a little bit self-conscious about the fact that I didn't cook that way.
Yeah.
Like I didn't cook very sophisticated. Like for me, you know, I get excited about like a plant-based lasagna, or
yeah.
I redid my mom's Johnny Marzetti, which is this weird Italian casserole thing, into a plant-based version. And I felt a little insecure about that. But then I'm like, you know what? Like, I don't actually want to take the time to make those advanced recipes.
That's exactly my philosophy. We are the same person. It is crazy. I love it. I mean, from the minute I met you, the first time I met you, I just felt the kindred spirits. But that was unnecessary to add in there. But I do want to say that I you're just like dead silence. But
no, but I mean, what am I supposed to say? Thank you. I am so great.
No, you are. But I fully, fully agree. For me, I just want recipes to be as damn simple and quick as possible. I mean, if my time cooking is equal to my time eating, I consider that like the greatest victory in the world.
Yes. I know. Oh my God. That's why I get so annoyed at Thanksgiving when I'm like, so wait, you just spent like 6 hours making this. We just ate it in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like this feels awful. Like such a weird waste of time.
Same. 100%. I don't get joy from that personally. People do that.
I will say that's why I go to great restaurants that just, you know, they might have dehydrated something for 5 days and fermented something for a week. And I'm like, yeah, this is great. I will eat this all day long and this tastes delicious, but I will not be doing this in my own kitchen.
Yep. I used to have a dehydrator, but I retired it.
Yeah, I did too. When I first got started, I did too. And I was just like, you know what? I just don't think this is my path for food.
Yeah, totally.
And so I think I did that cookbook, and I think it all happened so quickly because A, I worked my ass off, and B, the recipes are easy.
Yeah. How do you come up with your recipes? Is that a strange question?
No, I don't think that's strange. I think about
what you want to eat.
This might be like an asshole answer. Yeah, I'm like, what did I used to love to eat, or what do I love to eat? And then how can I make that into a recipe I can share with people? So yeah, so most of it, it's like that cookbook really, it's kind of a weird combination of food. Like I have like patata hara, which is like this Lebanese potato thing. And it's literally, it's like garlic and potatoes and cilantro and lemon. And then it also, I also have, you know, Johnny Marzetti in there. Like, what the hell is that combination? And like, what is that voice as me as like a cook? It's just stuff I want to eat.
Yeah, that's what it should be. And everyone else wants to eat it too. That's why your cookbook's doing so well and is so great. Do you have a favorite recipe from the book? Right this second. I'm sure you love them all, but right this second, first to mind, which one are you the most proud of?
Most proud of, I'm going to have to say, I feel most proud of those cookies and the lasagna, only because I get the most emails and messages and DMs about them from people that are struggling with the transition of their diet or struggling to get their family on board with their change. Mm. And those two recipes seem to be the two recipes that they're most grateful for, because that helped them at a party or that helped them at dinner. And so it's a very emo answer, but that's why I like them.
Great. They're
special to other people.
I mean, those cookies are unbelievable. They really are perfect. Like for vegan gluten-free cookies, they're insane.
I worked really hard on those.
They're perfect. They're the best I've ever baked from someone else's recipe. I mean, insane. So, you know, you just mentioned family and how, you know, the cookies help with their family. And I want to talk about your cutie patootie, your son, who is, no offense, the highlight of your Instagram stories.
I know.
When he eats your food, I just want to cry because he's just so incredibly adorable. And it's insane.
He's very, very special.
Oh my gosh. So how does that work with his diet? I mean, is he fully plant-based? Does he have, you know, some favorite foods? Has it been hard raising a child plant-based? I'm just curious, you know, for other people who want to know about their kids, because I know that's a big topic.
Yeah, it's a huge topic. From he came home at 3 weeks old, and at 3 weeks old, he became plant-based. So like,
he's adopted. He didn't just like come home, by the way.
Yeah.
My sister's adopted.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think, I don't know. I can't go on the record saying this, but because my mom does have the endometriosis, it was very hard for her to have children. So they had me after a few miscarriages, but then they couldn't have any more. So they adopted my little sis.
Yeah. And I do want to point out, because I get a lot of emails about it, I did not adopt because of my endo. I adopted because ever since I was a teenager, I knew I wanted to adopt. Like, and I always say, like, it must have been some sort of like endometriosis angel intervention that was like, put it in my head, you want to adopt.
It's amazing.
Yeah, but I just,
I've heard you say that. Yeah.
Yeah, I never had a desire to have kids. So anyway,
it's just meant to, I mean, it was just, yeah, because I think it is easy to assume.
People want to know about my infertility struggles. It's like, I have no idea about those because I never tried to get pregnant. But anyway,
no, thanks for clarifying.
Yeah, raising a plant based kid, I mean, it's easy now. I'll say that because he's three. I can control exactly what he eats for the most part. He's not, you know, 15 or 16 and like, you know, out in the world getting whatever food he wants. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, and when he gets that age, it will be his decision. But I will say that in our house, we eat 100% plant-based. Like he's never had meat before. He's had like some goat cheese at my in-laws' house. Mm-hmm. But when he goes to a birthday party, I let him have a cupcake. Well, actually, I don't go to birthday parties. It's like my husband's job.
Oh, you're not the kids. Birthday party mom?
I really do not enjoy children's birthday parties.
So, why? What is it about the children's birthday parties? Are you scared of clowns?
What do you think would be bad about a children's birthday party? All of the children.
Yeah. I mean, 3-year-olds. I don't even know, what do they do at a birthday party?
No, 1-year-olds, 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, 10-year-olds. I just don't enjoy being around that many children at once. So when Dan takes Sid to birthday parties, he will, and he thinks it's hilarious to do it. Like he'll send a photo of Sid eating like a cupcake to my family, and my family would be like, ooh, like Sid's eating gluten.
Drama. You know,
yeah, they just think it's funny. And it's like, if I just kind of feel like I actually really pick that up a lot. I interviewed Dr. Campbell on my podcast, and the younger Dr. Campbell from the China study. Mm-hmm. But this is before I had a kid, and he said, you know, when your kid goes to a birthday party, let them have a piece of cake, because 99% of the time they're eating really great. And also, he didn't say this, but this is what I think. I just think that if I restrict him in a way that makes him feel like that stuff is bad or dangerous, or he's just going to want it even more when he gets older.
Yeah.
So it's there needs to be, like, it's not bad food. It's just not something that we eat.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's not bad food. It's something we don't eat. Yeah.
It's crazy because sometimes when he will go to one of those birthday parties or he will have a treat, he'll say like, oh, my tummy kind of hurts, or his farts reek.
Interesting.
And it's just like, okay, well, you know, you had that. This is how you feel. Like, you know what I mean?
Do you make that correlation for him? You kind of point it out.
Mm-hmm. And I don't say like,
you're a bad boy. Yeah.
Yeah. I just say like, oh, well, you know, sometimes when you eat certain things, like it might not make your tummy feel good. So I can control it now. And I will also say that my in-laws, I hate saying that word because it sounds like they're assholes.
I know.
My husband's parents, they said later on, now that Sid is, you know, when he was around, I think like 1.5, they said, we were really skeptical about you feeding him a plant-based diet. And they're like, but now any one of our friends that bring it up, we like defend it so hard. Wow. Because they're like, look at this amazing, strong, vibrant, smart, taller than everyone in his class, stronger than all the kids. Like, it is okay and it works.
Wow.
So I thought it was cool that they admitted that they had fear around it. But what's even cooler is they didn't say or judge me to my face, I think.
To your face. I like that clarification.
Yeah. Like, I think that's kind of cool that because they could have been jerks about it.
True,
and then
their grandson.
It could have made me feel yucky coming over to their house or whatever. But yeah, everyone's on board. So.
Well, do you think that's because you're such a shining example of what a plant-based diet can do for someone? I mean, have you, you know, that's something that a lot of people struggle with, is other people's opinions and their comments and their eye rolls and their sighs and all that stuff, you know, when they're eating healthfully and others around them aren't. How have you navigated that?
I mean, thank you for saying I'm a good example, but I mean, yes, we're recording an entire podcast about this and I wrote a cookbook about it, but I will say that I do not talk about it. It's not the first, you know, there's that joke about like, you know, someone's vegan within like the first 2 seconds.
Yeah, as soon as they walk into a room. Yeah.
Yeah. Like my friends actually will, you know, be like, God, Jessica, just say that you're, you know, a vegan, or just say that you're plant-based. So, like if we're on like, you know, we're planning to go for a dinner with like a new friend that doesn't know that about me. And they're like, does anybody have any, you know, dietary stuff? And like, I just won't say anything.
Huh.
Because I don't know. I just don't want to say anything, because it's like, I can still have fun with you and I can still enjoy your company, and maybe I'll get a drink or eat before or whatever. So, you know, a lot of times my friends will just be like, yeah, Jessica is this. She's not going to say it.
Interesting.
I try to lead by that example of just not. It's my choice. Mm. It has nothing to do with you.
However, your whole mission is to inspire others to make that choice too. I mean, at least to start by having one plant-based meal a day, hence the one part plant. So that's really interesting that you're like, it's my thing, I don't impose. But at the same time, your whole mission is to help people also make it their thing.
Right. But if someone signs up for one of my classes or follows me on Instagram or ask me what I do, then I will share.
But you
or
don't,
if you follow me, you've already initiated some interest in it. It is my choice, and I do want to help as many people as possible, but I want to help people that want help.
Mm, that is delicious. I love that. That's amazing, because that's so that's very different than a lot of other vegans out there in the world. You know, they want to help people that don't even want to hear them sometimes, you know, hence why they can sometimes be mean. But I love what you're saying. I mean, I've gotten a lot of nasty comments, which is why I can say that, you know, from in emails from people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, So I think that's awesome. You help the people that want your help, that want, that are open to this. And, you know, you lead by a shining example. So people get enticed. People are like, what are you doing? You know, I want to do that too. I want what you're having.
I just wrote a story for The Kitchen about endometriosis. And at the end of it, I said, you know, share this with women that you know that have painful periods and endo. And it's like, you know, I'm putting the information out there. And really, I cannot go to your kitchen and make you eat this way.
Yeah.
You know? And so I just am putting this stuff out there. And if you want to pick it up, like, let's do this. But if not, like, I'm not going to tell you about it.
I love that. I love it. So a few questions about your personal plant preferences before I know you have to go.
Yeah.
What is your favorite plant?
To eat?
Yep.
Okay. God, why is this so hard?
It's like choosing between your children. You don't, you're not really, but your kitchen children.
You know, I will say this. The first thing that came to my mind was a green apple.
Mm.
And I heard once, I think it was like some sort of weird dietitian person or something on a podcast, but I heard once, which I think is true, is you know that you're truly hungry when a green apple or an apple will satisfy you. You know that feeling when you're like so hungry and you're like, you can see an apple in front of you. You're like, that's it. You know what I mean? So
I can't believe you just said green apple. Green apple's my favorite plant. And my first screen name was Green Apple Girly One. And it was my bat mitzvah theme. We had centerpieces with green apples in it at my bat mitzvah on our tables. So
we are kindred spirits.
I'm telling you. That's so funny. That's a hoot.
Yeah.
What do you do with it besides just eat it? Do you put almond butter on it?
Oh, yeah, almond butter. Like today I was in the car. I was running late. I had to go somewhere. I sliced up a green apple.
Not while you were driving.
No, not while I was driving. Before, I put it in this like weird little glass thing, put in a little thing of almond butter on the side, and I like dipped it as I drove and ate it. Yeah, it's for me, I don't know why, since I started changing my diet, it was like, it felt like the safety zone for me of like, I know I can have that green apple or that green apple and almond butter and feel like satisfied.
Yes, yes. And it doesn't bruise. So it's great to travel.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Perfect fruit. What is your most used kitchen tool?
Blender.
Nice. What is your favorite plant party restaurant or one part plant restaurant?
Oh, my favorite. I mean, it's so hard. I'm going to have to say I love Botanica in LA, my friend's restaurant, because it's not 100% plant based, but it's like 99%, and they just do such a good job with their plants. And in Charleston, I really love Hurialy.
How do you spell that?
Hurialy.
Cool. All right, good. That's helpful because we haven't heard from people in Charleston. And I know you have to go, but I'm going to ask you this. What is one book besides your own that has inspired you in some massive way? And I hope you say the book that I'm telepathically sending to you.
Yes. The book that it completely changed my life was Terry Walter's book.
Nice. Clean food.
Clean food. Well, because I was trying to remember if I got Clean Start or Clean Food first. Mm. But Terry Walter's Clean Food, hands down, changed my life. Like, bottom line. And I have emailed her that before. I only know her through email. And you actually know her,
yeah,
which is so cool. But that was the first book. The only cookbook when I changed my diet. My friend, I took the T. Colin Campbell certification in plant-based nutrition,
which I
want to say does not certify you as a nutritionist. It was just, I just wanted to learn more information.
Yeah.
But as a graduation gift, one of my friends gave me that book. And he wrote, you know, you might have not heard of her. She, though, is, and this was a huge meat eater guy. He was like, but she is, this is an amazing cookbook. And I got that and it was like, oh, I understand plant-based food now.
Yes. Well, Terry's been on the podcast. She was one of our first guests. She's literally my neighbor growing up. She's been my mentor. And I had no idea you had this fondness towards her. So I was reading your book. Your book is phenomenal. I literally read it in bed cover to cover. And the way I knew that you loved Terry, because I was reading your acknowledgments. That's how much I was deep into your book. And I was reading and I saw Terry Walter's name and I was in shock. And then we spoke about it.
And that's like a shout out to someone I don't even know. I was just like, this is how much she changed how I think about food.
Yeah.
And I just want to mention her, and I want to mention her as an example of, she's not someone that has 200,000 Instagram followers. She doesn't really have a blog. And it's just like, we are so obsessed with people that are big social media people. Like, let's start exploring people that aren't too, because those are like also the pioneers.
Thank you. Yes.
Became pioneers before Instagram. Like, yes. These people are like Ruth Reichel, like, she does not have Instagram. You know what I mean? And she is like a pioneer of women in food.
Yes.
It's like, let's get offline and like do some research on the pioneers.
Right.
Too.
I mean, they're the people that made it possible for us really to be doing what we're doing today. You know, they laid the groundwork at least.
Exactly.
Well before Instagram.
Yeah. And so I don't know. It's like, it bums me out when people like would click over to like someone like Terry or someone like that and be like, oh, well, it's like, just because you don't have fucking 100,000 Instagram followers doesn't mean that you're not talented. In fact, sometimes maybe you are more talented because you don't have time to be online all
the
time.
It's true. I mean, she can make like amazing sourdough bread from scratch, like basically with her eyes closed. I mean, she makes kombucha like I make, you know, a smoothie. Like, it's like, she's incredible. And her recipes are foolproof. I mean, her Teff cookies are out of this world. Like, I guess I just love cookies. I keep quoting your citing your guys' cookies. But
will you include all of her books in your show notes? Because I just feel like...
Yes. And I'll include a link to her podcast or interview on my thing. And we just need to have a three-way dinner sometime. Next time you're in New York, maybe she'll come in and we'll do it.
That'd
be awesome. We eat some plants. Okay. Well, where should everybody go? I mean, you have so many things. I want to shout out your two podcasts. The newer one in particular, The Cookbook Deal, which I call the serial of... cookbooks.
Thank you.
You know, like it's like a mystery, like a whodunit. There's cries.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like happiness moments. There's vomit. There's everything. But it's
traumatic
all about
events.
It's all about how you made your awesome cookbook. So I really encourage people to listen to that. It's really fun. And then there's your regular podcast, One Part Podcast. I always want to say One Part Plant, which is an amazing podcast. What else should we point people to?
And I just want to mention, I don't know when this is coming out, but I'm launching a new website called Know Your Indo.
Oh,
and
cool.
It is going to be just a resource page for women to be able to know the symptoms of endometriosis, what to do about it, and different treatment options, because I just don't think that there's anything out there. Everything is always very clinical or very outdated looking or bloggy. I just want to create a page to send women. And then I'm also going to be launching a self-care endo course too.
That is wonderful. You're doing great things for the endo community, and that's amazing. Thank you for that, from them. And thank you for everything you do, and thank you for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. I hope you're feeling extra fired up today to eat them plants. I'm sure you can think of at least one other human who could benefit from this show in their ears, right? Well, share it with them. And you can find all the deets and links from this episode, plus a heck of a lot more that takes the hell out of healthy eating, over at partyinmyplants.com/62.